I'm right at the cusp of New Year's Eve to New Year's Day.
The day after Thanksgiving, Betty Ruth Gibson Gattisendo and her granddaughter, Carmen Tureen Tilton,
All right.
Austin, Texas.
We can edit it down, I'm sure. Let's see. The app will prompt you to take a picture. Oh, I see. Oh, no, it's going. Okay. So they've got some really nice starter questions, and I think that's probably where we should begin. What is one of your earliest childhood memories? What is one of your earliest childhood memories?
Probably going to my grandfather Gibson's farm 8 miles out of Stanton, Texas. And the farm
I
think I can do it.
Here, hang on.
No.
I'll get you a tray. That's not flat enough for it.
Now I may be telling the truth, and I may be lying if I drink any more tequila.
For purposes of recording, there's a large shot of tequila which has been proffered to aid in storytelling. Okay, so going to your grandfather Gibson's farm, 8 miles outside of Stanton?
Right.
Do you remember it, like the journey itself, or the fall? Like, is there anything in particular about it that you think you remember?
No, except that I remember part of it was a paved road, and then the last 4 miles was a dirt road. And I remember the house and a big barn and then a cow shed and a little a pond that he stocked with catfish. And then there was a dugout, which is I don't know how to describe a dugout, but a dugout is like a cellar, but part of it is above ground.
Huh. So it's like burned into the ground a little bit.
Right.
Is it used for storage? Or
well,
is it...
a knuckle lived there.
Oh, All right. The storage.
Mm-hmm.
A different
story. His wife, and I remember that we had a flat roof. And it was above ground, a flat roof. And we lay out there in the summertime and looked at the stars and made stories. And I remember two fun things. His wife was coming from the outhouse, and he said, "Here comes the lady in pink. I bet her feet stink." Now, why would you remember something like that and not something important?
When you guys would go out to that grandfather's house, were y'all, I assume you guys were driving in like a pickup truck or something?
I think my father had a 1936 Ford.
Okay.
And we went and he had drove out there to it.
And did y'all always go, you and your older sister Ellen and Red, or?
No, Red, I think, he was 5 years younger than me. So I don't remember being there with him. I just remember being there with my sister. And we would go and maybe stay a week in the summertime. And I remember that we shelled peas. And we had to gather the eggs. And I remember hating to gather the eggs if a hen was sitting on the nest. And then we'd fish from the pond. My grandfather stocked it with catfish, and we would fish. And then most of the time while we were there, there would be an ice cream social when that all the neighbors would come with freezers of ice cream. And there might be 4 or 5 different freezers. And if you sat on the freezer while it was being turned, then you got the dasher. See, in a turning ice cream freezer.
Mm-hmm.
When it's almost done, they pull out the dash.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were the one sitting on that while they were turning, you got to have
you got to lick basically
lick
the spoon.
The dash.
Or the was your grandmother there, or was it just your
yes,
grandfather?
Yes, my grandmother was there. And one thing I remember, my grandfather Gibson, Marion Gibson, was a dancer and a square dance caller. But if he came in and there was music playing on the grandmother's little radio, she might be stirring the beans and he would grab her to dance. And here I can see them dancing with her holding up the spoon as they danced around.
What was your grandmother's name? Grandmother.
I can't remember. The other grandmother was, it'll come, but Grandmother Hamilton was Rosa, but Grandmother Gibson, I can't remember at the moment. It'll come.
What did you call your grandparents? What did you call your grandparents?
You call them grandmother and grandfather.
Both
granddaddy, I don't think. Granddaddy. Grandmother and granddaddy.
I like granddaddy. That's a nice formal yet familial.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's sweet. Mm-hmm. So we were talking about this earlier on the other side. I know you grew up in Stanton, Texas. I know you met Dawn in Stanton. How on earth did Dawn find Stanton, Texas?
Okay, he had graduated from medical school and had been in the Air Force in San Antonio and traveled while he was still in the Air Force around, and he was from Virginia, so he liked West Texas. And when his father died and he knew he was going to help support his stepmother, he took a job at that time, I can't remember but there was hospitals hired a doctor. And so he was paid some federal program.
Okay.
So he came to Stanton as a doctor of the Stanton or Martin County Memorial Hospital as a paid. And I had just graduated. I don't know how long he had been there, but I graduated from Baylor University in 1950, I was in Stanton for the 4th of July, and every year they have a parade in Stanton for the 4th of July, and it goes down one street and then makes a turn. Well, at that turn, there was an awning over the sidewalk, and boys would be up there in order to watch the parade. Well, when the parade made the corner, all the boys ran to the other side and the roof caved in. And my high school friend's grandmother was one of the women seriously hurt. So they took them to the hospital, and my roommate that I was traveling with, we went, there was not enough nurses to take care of, so we went to take care of those people that had been in the injury, and that's when I met Dawn.
And you had graduated with a degree in nursing.
I had graduated from Baylor University School of Nursing.
Your friend too?
And my friend too.
Is that your first, like, hands-on nursing experience?
Well, we were not intending to stay in Stanton. We already had a job at a children's hospital in Denver. So we were just actually coming through, but we had a couple of weeks before we were supposed to be in Denver. So we volunteered to help take care of the patients that had been injured because of the fall. I took the night shift. We did 12 hours, and she took days, and I took nights. And that's when I would sit and visit with Dr. Gaddis, Dawn, and never left. Never went to Colorado.
Did she?
No. She ended up staying. He talked us into, they were going to open a new hospital and he talked us into both staying to work in the new hospital, and she ended up marrying in Stanton and staying. So
you guys met in Stanton, and you started working together in Stanton.
Mm-hmm.
And your family is from Stanton.
Right.
And his family is from Virginia.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So how did y'all move from the new hospital in Stanton out to Alpine and then Fort Davis?
When he was in Stanton, he was working as a salaried doctor. And he decided he did not, which meant that somebody was pretty much a lay governing board determined the quality of the medicine.
Mm.
So that's when he decided that he wanted to go and have his own clinic and his own hospital. And a group of men from Fort Davis came looking.
Goodness.
Came looking for doctors that might be interested. And they were going to build a little clinic building, but he did not want to be governed by another board, so we borrowed the money. And we, by that time, we had married. We borrowed the money and built a little 7-bed hospital clinic in Fort Davis.
When y'all opened, I've always been kind of curious. When y'all opened y'all's place in Fort Davis, were y'all the only little hospital clinic in that area, or
yes.
Was there?
We were the only little hospital. The nearest hospital was Fort Stockton. Alpine did not have a hospital. There was a couple of doctors that had clinics and a couple of beds that they kept people overnight. But the nearest hospital was Fort Stockton, 60 miles away.
Yeah.
And that was until the Big Bend Memorial Hospital got mm-hmm. built for the entire area. And that's when we moved to Alpine.
So when in setting up the hospital, did you guys have Pam, your eldest daughter?
Pam actually was born in Stanton.
Oh,
before
y'all left.
So she would have been Paul, were you born in Stanton or
Fort Davis?
Fort Davis, right. So
Pam was born in Stanton, though,
yeah,
right?
Pam was born in Stanton, and then she was about 3, I think, when we moved to Fort Davis. And then, Paul was born in Fort Davis.
And then Dave was born in Alpine, or
no,
Fort Davis?
No, Dave was born in Fort Davis. Mm-hmm.
So I have a photo, or I've seen a photo somewhere, of you. And I want to say it's a unconvertible, but it's you and a car and a Doberman Pinscher.
That would have had to be when I was in Stanton before I married Don. I did school nursing and had rural schools. And I drove a car, but I always carried that Doberman Pinscher with me.
So you would visit, like, schools
in the county. I was county school nurse and had, at that time, 4 rural schools. Now they're all consolidated, but at that time there was Courtney and Lenora and Tarzan and Flower Grove.
Lenora and, not Flower Grove.
Tarzan.
They are definitely still existing.
Yeah.
I've seen those schools mentioned.
So now the county schools are all consolidated into a big school, and no longer the individual rural schools.
So when you became that school nurse, did you deal with, were you there for like a single day and you attended to all
there,
the bumps and scrapes?
I was there and mostly there to do eye checks and hearing techs, and once a year, gosh.
No, thank you. We're good. So you did almost all like physicals then.
Yeah.
Less of the like playground injuries,
right,
and that sort of thing, and more of the...
We tried to do more education, health education, than first aid, because anybody could do first aid, could give an aspirin, could band-aid something, but Don wanted to have an educational program for kids, so...
What did the dog do when you were inside the school?
What?
What did the dog do when you were inside the school? Did he just hang out in the car?
Oh, I think we had two cars.
Okay.
Yeah, because I had a little Ford that I drove, because I carried that Doberman Pinscher with me, because I was always going to be in rural areas. And one time I did have a flat, and I could not change the tire because it had been put on with electric lug wrench. I knew how to change the tire, but I couldn't. So a farmer stopped to help me. Well, that Doberman Pinscher, every time that farmer picked up the wrench, that Doberman Pinscher, you know. So finally, I put the dog in the car, and the dog still tried to come out. And so finally the farmer said, you know, would you mind just going in, getting in that car and sitting with the dog, because he's trying to get out to get me.
It was a nice farmer to still try and help you with the tire.
Right. I would have laid down that lug wrench and said, forget it, kid.
Yeah.
So we talked about how Don got to Stanton and how they met. In that hospital, and going to her grandfather
Marion Gibson's
farm was one of her earliest memories. It predated Red.
One of the, to me, one of the interesting stories about rural school nursing was, I think Dr. Geddes himself, Don, bought the audiometer to check hearing. And one of the children that we checked had been already classified as a misfit and a troublemaker, and we discovered that he had a hearing loss. And so they, after we checked the hearing, we were able somehow to get him a hearing aid, and he straightened out and became a good student. Well, about a year ago, I was in, happened to be in Stanton, Texas, and a cousin owned a garage, and a man and his wife coming through Stanton on the way to El Paso on Highway 90 had car trouble, and they stopped at the garage that my cousin owned, and the man told my cousin, he said, years ago I went to school in Lenora, rural school, and the doctor and his wife found that I had a hearing loss, gave me a hearing aid. I went ahead from being a troublemaker and a misfit to being a good student. I went ahead and graduated, went to university, became a professor, and now I'm a professor at some college in Montana. And my cousin happened to know that I was in town, and he said, I bet that nurse was a nurse. And he said, do you remember the name? And he said, I think it was Getty or something like that. And he said, Miss Gaddis. So they called me, and I went to the garage, and the man said, you know, I want to thank you because you changed my life. That's probably the most significant contribution outside of having good children and grandchildren and great-grandson that I have.
One of my favorite things about going to Alpine with you is the introduction that is the, like, everybody knows you, and then I get to be introduced as the granddaughter, and then the first thing they say is, did you know that your grandmother, or did you know that Don delivered me? And it has a weird feeling of going, oh, this entire town, a whole generation of this town was born in the hospital that my grandparents opened.
Yeah.
and it's kind of cool.
Well, you would have enjoyed last week. I was in Alpine, and I'm still mischievous at 90 years old. There was a young man, well, he wasn't so young, he's probably 50 or 60, but I remember delivering him, and I remember patting him on his butt, and I could not resist. There he was visiting with somebody, and I went up and hit him in on the bottom, and I said, I bet I was the first woman to see you naked.
Yeah.
You're it's still fun.
The first baby born at Fort Davis was Tom Kelly, right?
Pardon?
The first baby born at the new hospital was Tom Kelly. Is that correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then my dad was the second baby
second
the next day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So who did you help deliver Tom Kelly the day before you gave
yes.
birth to my dad?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. I never thought about that.
And for your dad, the doctor was supposed to come from Midland to deliver, but I went into early labor, but I remember that we had, usually I would be the one set up for delivery, and I remember going into labor, and we had a new nurse, and I had to lay there on the delivery table and tell her how to set up for the for between pains.
It's a good thing you guys had a new nurse. You had a nurse.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. How early was Dad?
That would have been, that was, and Paul, you were born?
1954.
No, I mean, how preterm was he?
Six weeks.
That's a long time.
In fact, we had a woman that took care of him because I still had, as soon as I could, I had to be back at work because I was the only nurse. And she loved holding his hands up because you could see the bones in his fingers, you know. If you held, because he had little enough skin,
mm-hmm.
you could do.
What was it like going back to work so soon after having your second child?
Well, there wasn't any choice, so I didn't think about it. Yeah, you just.
Did you have to deal with your own physical recovery while you were attending to everybody else?
I think I probably had a little bit of recovery time, but not a lengthy recovery time. But I was young and strong, so, you know, the Indian women would deliver their babies and then put them on their back and hike the next 100 miles, so I figured that I wasn't any different. I didn't have to hike 100 miles.
How long was it just you and Dawn before you got another nurse?
It was always hard to get nurses in a little town like Fort Davis because a single nurse, there was no particular attraction to coming to Fort Davis. So a nurse had to come as a wife of maybe one of the astronomers or one of the public school teachers. And I remember the first good RN that we had was her father was a minister, Presbyterian minister. And it was very hard to get RNs. So most of the time we had to use licensed vocational nurses or help mm-hmm. train someone ourselves, which meant that you had to sort of constantly be...
You had to watch and monitor.
Watching,
and,
so, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll check.
And I particularly, even after Pam was little and Paul was born, I would sometime have to pull a night shift. Hmm. Well, we always had good home help, live-in help, and because if I had to work mm-hmm. at night. And I remember one night I was working nights and I heard a knock, 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 knock on the front door. And I went to the front door of the hospital, of the little hospital, and the man was rather bloody.
Hmm.
And so I opened the door, and he had been in a car wreck just near. He'd missed a curve right in front of the little hospital. And he told me that his friend was still in the car. So I got my flashlight and went out, and... because there wasn't anybody to call.
Yeah.
There was no sheriff or anybody.
No 911 or...
So I went out and the pickup was turned over, and I remembered getting down on my knees, shining the flashlight under the pickup, thinking, you know, it's going to be a bloody body. But there's a very cheerful man that said, "When is this, senora?" He was so drunk that he wasn't hurt a bit.
You just sort of help him out and pour him out of the car.
Well, about that time, I was able to reach the sheriff and wake him up, and he came and took care of it all. They were speeding and just happened to miss a turn and turned over.
Mm-hmm. What were the most common reasons people would end up at Joslin Hospital?
Usually it would be a broken bone, an injury. Cowboys particularly were always getting, you know, thrown from horses or falling. So that would be automobile accidents would have been second cause. Occasionally... a heart attack, but usually if it was something that was going to require a long-term and specialized care, we took care of them immediately, and then they went on to Fort Stockton, maybe Midland, Odessa, El Paso. It was not close to anything.
How did they get from y'all's hospital to one of the other ones? Were they doing like helicopters and whatnot at that time? Or
no helicopters. It was always, and very often it would be in the back of a pickup, very well bundled up because they might not could fit in a car.
Mm-hmm.
We saw a lot of patients from Ojinaga, Mexico, because there was no hospital at all in Ojinaga. So we had a good relationship. So very early, that's how I still have a good relationship with people in Mexico, because we took care of them for so long.
What?
And then they did build a hospital in Ojinaga. Well, when we closed the Fort Davis Hospital and moved to Alpine, we gave all of the equipment to Ojinaga Hospital.
Hmm.
So.
Did y'all get to know the doctors that eventually set up practice in Ojinaga?
Right. Mm-hmm. And it was why for many, many years I could cross from Presidio, U.S. to Ojinaga just waving. You know, there was never... The only time that I ever had any trouble is that I bought bolillos, the Mexican roll, in Ojinaga. So if I was going down... I would always take a big box and maybe buy 10 dozen bolillos, because people in Fort Davis would say, "Next time you go, bring me a dozen, bring me a dozen." So I was coming back one time with a big box, probably 10 or 12, maybe 14 dozen hard Mexican rolls, and a new immigration officer, that didn't know me looked in my trunk of my car and saw that I had all that bread. He knew I was carrying something. And
there's just no reason you would have that much bread in your car.
And so he was prepared to, I don't know what he was going to do, whether he was going to slice open every bread or not, but I pleaded for him to call one of the other immigration officers. And the other guy said, oh, she brings bread all the time. There's no drugs in that bread.
Were there any patients or cases in Port Davis that were particularly difficult that, you know, you still think about or that stuck with you?
No, but two interesting cases. One is we had a little old man that had made a significant loan to us, a rancher, to build a little hospital, and we had him as a patient, and he fell out of bed trying to pinch the nurse. And then another time during the night, Dr. Gaddis had as a friend a rancher who had a cutting horse, a very expensive horse, and had a problem with the leg. Well, they brought the horse in the hospital to x-ray and one of the patients said, "Doctor, I had the worst dream last night. I dreamed there was a horse coming down the hall." And Don said, "Well, I'm sorry to tell you, but that wasn't, or I'm glad to tell you, that wasn't a dream. There was a horse coming down the hall."
What would you say, when you think back over your kind of career and life, what are the big moments that really stand out to you as, like, these are the, you know, the things that sort of encapsulate big decisions that you made or highly impactful things that you did?
Well, there's a lot of just people are so good. You know, I really can hardly recall any moment or any person that wasn't kind and generous. Now, they might be drinkers, they might be cursers, or might be anything else, but they were nearly always generous and kind. And I remember one woman from a businesswoman from Presidio that came through often going to a bank in Pecos for some reason, and she always carried baby calves in the back seat of her car, not a pickup, but the back seat of her car, because, and then she would go to Pecos, Texas, and sell those calves for people that wanted, you know, calf meat. Well, when she came through Fort Davis, she banked in Fort Davis, but it would be before the bank opened, so it was not uncommon for her to leave a bag of money for me to put in the bank the next morning. Well, so then it would sometimes be several thousand dollars, you know, to put in the bank. Well, she happened to be coming through one time when Pam was having her sixth, daughter Pam was having her sixth birthday, and she found out about it, so she went to the drugstore and ordered ice cream for the whole elementary school.
Do you know this woman? Do you know who she is? Where she is?
I knew her. She's died, you know, a long time ago, but I think, I can't remember what else she did. I think she had a business in Ohinaga, and I think it was a motel, and her name was maybe Ma Crosby. But I'm not absolutely sure.
So what prompted the move from Fort Davis?
Well, we realized, actually the health department said, you know, you run a good little hospital, but times are going to come that there's going to be more and more restrictions. You're going to have an RN for every shift. You're going to have a certain lighting. You're going to have this and this and this. So we would suggest that you consider moving to Alpine and using that facility. So that's what we did, we moved to Alpine, built a clinic right across the street from the Big Men Memorial Hospital, and sold the building that had previously been the hospital.
Is that, do you know if that building is still standing in Fort Davis?
No.
It's like right as you come into town, isn't it?
It's what?
Isn't it right as you,
it was the crossroads. It was right in the heart of Alpine, at the crossroads to Marfa and Alpine. And I think we sold it first to a man who was a printer and printed his own books, and he moved in and lived there, remodeled inside, lived there and had a printing press. And then he sold it to someone else, and then finally someone bought it and tore it down. Yeah, so it's no longer standing.
Was that the first building you ever sold?
Hmm?
Was that the first building you ever sold?
Yes. As a matter of fact, that was the first building I ever sold.
How did you guys end up getting in kind of home buying and selling and all of the property stuff that you and the kids
well,
did later?
Well, that was more, I don't think I did that until when Dr. Gaddis died, after he died. But because we had moved to Alpine and built a fine home. But when Dr. Gaddis died, that I had three children and to try to support them. And doctors are kind of notorious for not saving a lot of money, or at that time he wasn't expecting to die young, mm-hmm. So it was a matter of trying to sell that property in Alpine to support three children. Yeah. So that was
the first of
my real estate career. Yeah.
Which has been wildly successful.
What did y'all? So y'all sold the big house
mm-hmm.
after Don died,
mm-hmm.
and then stayed in Alpine at that point, or did y'all start?
Well, I think that when Don died, Pam was in school at college age. She was in Denver. Paul was at St. Stephen's in Austin. David would have been just going into high school. So what I did is immediately leased the house for a year and moved with David to Austin and put him in St. Stephen's school as well. And then the next year, then I knew that I needed the money for further. And then I sold the house.
How did you end up buying or having the yurt property outside of Austin?
Okay, I moved to Austin and became friends with the architects that were developing that piece of property. And I sold the house, and I sold a little clinic building. And so I had a little sack of money. So I invested that in the development of the yurt property.
And then you just
then I
threw
just,
open the doors and you let artists come on in?
It happened.
What did you do in Austin at that time?
I think in Austin at that time, I mostly worked on the yurt, the actual building of the yurt community, the five buildings. Mm-hmm.
How old were you at that time?
No. How old was I?
Much younger than we are now.
35-ish, something like that, because I don't remember when you and Hank both turned 40.
Okay. Yeah, I was,
no, you couldn't have been 35.
Maybe you're already 40. Maybe I remember when you and Hank turned 50.
No, I mean, to imagine you would have, if Pam was already in college, that would put Pam at 18 or 19 years
okay.
old, which would mean that,
so
I mean,
that,
but I'm
I think
old
I,
you were
I think
Pam.
I think I was in early 40s.
Yeah, that's right. You were early mm-hmm. 40s when I met you. And then, because I remember you and Hank's turning 50 at the same time. Mm-hmm. Your birthdays were right together.
Okay.
I met you shortly after all that was happening. I hadn't met you yet when you were building the earth. Mm-hmm. I met you after they were already on the ground and everything.
Yeah. Are there any memories from the dirt era to sort of come to you randomly and make you smile?
Oh, my goodness. The yurt area is full of memories because it was a very active time with lots of different people because the architects that were doing it were actually the foam house. Why would you call that pre-farm?
Prefab?
No, it's not
organic. Organic.
It's well, it's not. But was it pre? It didn't prefabricate it, did they?
No,
like
no,
with casting molds and
preform.
Stuff.
Preform.
It was
preform. It was, yeah, entirely.
So that was so.
That drew a lot of attention. The whole preform architecture movement.
Mm-hmm.
Organic forms, the Earth House, the Bloom House later. Every 2 years it would be published in Texas, the Daily Texas.
And then how we got involved in the yurt house, David was at St. Stephen's School, and this professor person came from Massachusetts to build his yurts or round outward slanting wall structures on different campuses where kids helped with the building. And then the little buildings were used as study halls or study room or meditation. And we happened to ask him, well, does anybody ever live in one of these things? They had outward slanting walls and windows, the entire round of the house. And he said, well, I do. So that's when we decided to build for ourselves.
What was his name?
What was that professor's name?
Copperthwaite.
Copperthwaite. Wow.
So why yurts? Why not, you know,
another house?
A box, a tree house, or
because,
any other?
Because that's what happened.
Because that's what he came to St. Stephen's to do the workshop on.
Uh-huh.
Well, they were easy to build and they were inexpensive, and mm-hmm. so
yeah.
That was.
You guys own one out at the Paramalis now that needs help.
That's right. You own one now.
I know. A little piece of the 70s to carry
uh-huh.
forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but it's an under the table year.
Given what everybody else has done out there in the last year, it's one of the more legitimate creations.
So I'm gonna stop this recording because we're almost out of time with it. And then
minute. What I would say in 1 minute is that I have lived 90 years old. I am now. And I have lived a full, generous life with many, many contributors from friends to family. And I've been especially, I have to say, blessed with family. Children, their spouses, the 11 grandchildren, and the 2 great-grandchildren. So life is good.
We did it.
That was fun.